Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Committee for today. I know that Representative Petersburg is not here, so do we have a motion for the minutes? Anyone? Representative Murphy, you look like
yes.
You read the minutes.
I would like to make a motion.
Okay.
To approve the minutes.
Representative Murphy. Minutes for our previous meeting. That was February 15th. Okay. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We have three bills on the agenda today. Our first bill is House File 3437, and I'll move that House File 3437 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Cleavorne, welcome, and to your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the Transportation Committee. It's with a heavy heart and with great honor that we're here today, and I'd like to thank you for the hearing on House File 3437, the Michael Gowell Memorial Bridge legislation. Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, I'd like to take a moment of personal privilege.
Absolutely.
And I would ask for a moment of silence for all of those individuals who work in our state who have given their lives in service of our state. So if it's all right with you, I would ask for a moment of silence.
Moment of silence for those who serve our state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On August 30th of 2023, Mr. Gao went to work on the construction of the Rockford Road Bridge over Highway 169. This is a bridge that links Plymouth to the city of New Hope. And like many of us, when Mike left for work that morning, he expected to return home to his wife, Jennifer, at the end of the day. Sadly, that did not happen, and our state lost a dedicated and beloved MnDOT employee in a tragic work accident. Michael was a unique man. He paid attention to the small details. But I'd like to talk to him about, I'd like to talk about him as the person. Mike and Jennifer recently celebrated their 25th wedding anniversary. And with us today, we have Jen, who is Michael's wife, and Paige, the light of his life, and his daughter Paige. And Mike and Jennifer had just recently celebrated their 25th wedding anniversary, and we're looking forward to those empty nest years. Together, they had three adult children. They have Paige, Dalton, and Andrew, and six grandchildren. And those grandchildren Mike described as his pride and joy. Mike was an individual who never knew a stranger, and his smile drew others towards him. He was described by his friends as the most loyal person you would ever meet. Described as a not on the couch kind of guy, Mike is described as energetic and goofy. He loved to play golf and to fish, and he looked forward to family time at the cabin. He was a true Minnesota outdoors guy. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask you to recognize Representative Farr, who will speak to him as a man of service.
Welcome, Representative Farr.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you.
For your comments.
Thank you. Thank you, committee members. None of us wish that we were here today, it is an honor to be here to co-author this bill. Mike is a resident of Belle Plaine and 22B, and hence my being here. He was a dedicated public servant, serving 14 years in the highway department as well as 23 years in the fire department. While I did not know Mike personally, I know of several Belle Plaine firemen and have some close personal friends that worked with Mike and the Seward County Pioneer Power Firemen's Association. And when you talk to those individuals, what they'll tell you about Mike was if you wanted to find him, just follow the laughter. And when you found the origin of the laughter, you would find Mike there. So over the years, he served countless Minnesotans, providing safe roads and to travel on and protecting those in their most vulnerable states. The relationship that he's built working side by side with so many of these people is definitely a testament to who he was. Colleagues from all walks of life have shared the memories of their times working together and the laughs that they had with Mike. He was a dedicated public servant, a value that he passed on to his son who was serving in the military. Stewardship to others is at the core of who Mike was. He lived his values every day to put others first and impact the community that he felt and appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Farr.
Mr. Chair, if it would be all right with you, both Mrs. Gao and Paige would like to just have a moment to say just a few words about their husband and father.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and we're so, so sorry for your loss, and we really appreciate you being here, and I know that it's difficult, but we really want to do this honor, and so welcome, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you for bringing this bill to the committee to hear it. I am Jenny Gao. I am his wife. Mike was a wonderful, passionate man that put his family first, made sure that he would always be there for them. He put his heart and soul into everything he loved, from family, friends, working for MnDOT, serving on the Belle Plaine Fire Department, being president of Pioneer Power Fire Association. With everything he did, he made people feel like they mattered and took the time to listen. He would do anything for anybody that he knew or even just met. He had a great love for the outdoors and sports, but most of all, his children and grandchildren. His laughter could be heard for miles, and his hugs could be felt for days. I have been extremely blessed to call him mine and build the life we've shared together. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
And Mr. Chair, if you would recognize Paige, his daughter, I would appreciate it, please.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
I'm Paige Gao. My dad was a caring, loving, hardworking, and dedicated man. He was all about his family, friends, and community. Not a day went by that he didn't drop anything he had to do to help anyone that needed it. My dad was all about our family and making sure we had everything we needed, even if that meant working long hours, late nights, or missing some big days, but he was always there no matter what. He was always there to support the ones he loved. My dad was my biggest supporter and hero, and now it's my turn to be his. Thank you.
You are certainly his hero. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Cleavorn.
Mr. Chair, you can see the sign in front of the dais. That would be a great honor for the city of Plymouth to hang in recognition of Michael Gao and his co-workers who give their all every day. And I would just like to acknowledge in the audience today, we have with us two members of the Belle Plaine Fire Department where he served, and we have four members from MnDOT who served on the crew that Mr. Gao worked on every day. So I would like to just thank them also for their service to our state. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would just like members to take a moment and understand that many people give their lives in service of our state. And it's the ordinary individual who goes to work every day that we sometimes don't stop and smile and give them a moment of thanks. But today we have that opportunity. And I ask that you honor the life of Mr. Gao by supporting this legislation and moving it forward. And I ask that the motion for re-referral to Ways and Means be unanimously adopted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any committee discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sadly, these memorial bridges and roads, I don't think they're going to go away the way that our current life, you know, life and death happens and accidents occur. I was wondering if Mr. Lee could maybe explain, because it's my understanding that there is a cost, but it's not a cost to the state to make one of these bridges, to get the signs and everything. So just not necessarily for this situation, but because I am sadly afraid that there will be more situations in the future, and if we all understand how this works, then we can have a better understanding of it. If Mr. Lee can answer the funding aspect of this.
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, if you look on the language of the bill on line 1.10, it's notwithstanding the advocates raising the money, the signs tend to cost about $3,000. There's usually a pro forma fiscal note. Unfortunately, fiscal note wasn't ready for this committee because the fiscal note system was down over the weekend. But yeah, it's about a $3,000 trunk highway cost.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. I just want to mention that I'm from Belle Plaine. I grew up in Belle Plaine. And I just want to let you know from everybody in Belle Plaine how much we appreciate all our people that help us and are there for us. And I just wanted to let you know that from Belle Plaine, I'm going to speak for the people of Belle Plaine, and that we're very appreciative, and we're very sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Any other members have questions or comments? Is there anyone else from the audience that wishes to testify? Okay. Representative Cleaverne, any final words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just ask for a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And again, we appreciate you coming. I know how difficult it is, but this will be a lasting memorial that generations of people will see over many years. So we appreciate your bill, Representative Farr, Representative Cleaverne. Chair Cleaverne, thank you so much. Okay, we're ready for a vote then. I will repeat the motion that House File 3437 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
and thank you
for bringing this to our committee. Okay. The next bill on the calendar, Vice Chair Tapke of House File 3071. I understand you have a DE amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, we have a DE that we've been working on since last session to get the bill in the shape we'd like to be in.
Okay. What does the DE entail?
The DE adds, get to my notes here, apologize. So what this bill does is we are working with DVS and with community members on creating and implementing plain language and manuals for the DVS driver's test and the manuals. So we'll be translating manuals to make sure that everyone adequately and appropriately learns how to drive in the state of Minnesota and also to pass the driver's test. And so as we know, there's a backlog on driver's tests and where that is because a lot of folks are taking the driver's test time and time again. So we will be helping make sure that people have the right information and are able to pass the test without being tripped up. And we'll go into that a little bit more in a moment, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's move your bill first. I think the motion is for House File 3071 to be referred to Ways and Means.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's the motion.
Okay. So is there any discussion to the amendment that Vice Chair Tapke described? All those in favor of the DE signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. Okay, so we have House File 3071 as amended before us. Is there any additional items you would like to discuss?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Chair and members, there has long been a has long been work in the state of Minnesota to implement plain language. So it has their federal statutes that require plain language in our bills and how we work in government, but also Governor Dayton in 2014 had an executive order requiring plain language for everything in the executive branch. And so DVS has been working on plain language on the driver's test and manual for quite some time. And what this bill will do is help get to that final place with making sure that the driver's test and the manual are accessible and able to be used by everybody in the state of Minnesota that is learning to drive. And so last session, Amna Kieran, who is an English teacher in Andover, came to us with talking about this bill and why it is important. And I'd like her, Mr. Chair, if you're okay with that, to come down and testify as to the need of the bill.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Amna Kieran. And thank you very much for having me here. All right, so I'm an ESL teacher at, and I teach English as a second language to the speakers, to the students who have other languages involved at their households. And I've been affiliated with Anoka-Hennepin School District for almost 6 years. As a part of my job, I not only provide direct English language instructions to the students, but I also help them in their mainstream classes as well to help the materials of mainstream classes accessible to them. So while I was helping some of my students, I started helping them with the drivers at classes as well, and I could see that they were very ecstatic taking those classes. They were working really hard because they knew that after that they'll be able to pass the test and will be able to help their families. And like I said, that they were passing all the tests and they were coming for extra help before and after school. But when it came to actual DVS, the final test, they were failing it. Upon inquiry, they said that they did not understand the questions in the test. And then they related similar experiences about their family members as well, who had a great deal of experience of driving in their countries. And yet when they came to the U.S. and they took the test here, they were failing it. And some of them probably are still driving outside, like out on the roads and without a driver's license now and with no insurance. And honestly speaking, I do not blame them because they cannot starve their kids to death because of a poorly written test. I spoke with some of the native speakers as well about this issue and inquired about their experiences about it. And they had similar experiences too. They were going through the same ordeal of complex language and confusing wording in the test. I corresponded with the DVS about it and wondered about what was their rationale behind writing the questions the way they did when the same questions can be written in simple and plain language. And I also provided them with the examples, taking some of their questions and rewrote them in simple and plain English, but I did not get a very satisfactory response, which led me into doing a deeper study on that, in which I collected data from native speakers of the language and non-native speakers of the languages on this on the same issue. And here are some of the examples that I had. Before I give you the examples, I would like to show you the data. So one of the questions on the on my questionnaire was, what did you find more difficult on the test? And it is collected both from native and non-native speakers. So was it the content on the test or the language of the test? And here is the pie chart. We can see this is the result of the non-native speakers. This is how many people found the language difficult. And the below the second pie chart, that is for all the native speakers, all this red, they are finding the language difficult and not the content. The next question on the test, the questionnaire was, did you find language confusing? And this top one is for the non-native speakers. They were all finding the language and the wording on the test confusing. And this is for the native speakers. So we can see that in both the pie charts, there's not much difference. So the point we're trying to make here is that if the test is this much difficult and the language is this much complex and complicated for the native speakers of the language, imagine how much more it is going to be for non-native speakers of the language. And here I would like to give you some examples of the typical language of the tests on the questions on the test. Obviously, it's not stolen from the secure test of the drivers, their driver's test, but it's the typical language they use. So backing up is not allowed on freeways or expressways except for blank. So here it has a multiple layers of complexity. Not only we are using double negatives, but also we are expecting the test taker to give us the answer, which is not the right answer. So we are kind of like making the test tricky. So as human, at least my brain works is, as soon as I read a question, I start looking for the answer and not for something which is not the answer. But that's what we are trying to make the people do here. So the same question can be rewritten as, only blank vehicles are allowed to back up on a freeway. It's exactly same question and now cleaned up. Another example for that is, on urban or town roads, the legal speed limit under ideal driving conditions is blank unless traffic signs indicate otherwise. Again, packed with language and packed with tricky. The formation of the question is very tricky. The same question can be rewritten following the guidelines of Plain Language Act. Could be, when the speed limit is not posted on the city or the town roads, the legal speed limit is blank. Another, just one more example, with the complicated and obscure vocabulary. Anyone who flees a police officer using a motor vehicle may be sentenced to imprisonment for not more than. Again, it has multiple layer of complexities, and plus the kind of vocabulary is used. For example, flees, that can have multiple meanings. Sentenced, multiple meanings. Imprisonment, not everyone would understand what imprisonment means. Why can we not write the same question as, if anyone runs away from a police officer using a motor vehicle, he or she can go to jail for blank or less time. So from my first correspondence with the DVS, they thought that I'm asking them to bring down the rigor of the test or to make the test easy. By no means we are asking that. We're just asking them to keep the rigor of the test the same, but ask the questions in a way where people can understand it. So from these examples, it's crystal clear that the DVS employs difficult English language, obscure vocabulary, and complicated sentence structures to write the questions. This makes the test seem more like an advanced English language test and not a knowledge test for the driving. That leads us to two significant outcomes. First of all, the test, the current test that we have, is invalid assessment of the test, because the intent of the test is to know, to assess the driving knowledge of the test taker and not their ability to be able to decode complex sentence structures, because it's not an advanced literacy exam, it's a driver's test. And secondly, this DVS test turns out to be inequitable and clearly discriminates against those individuals who do not speak English as a first language, and also those, the native speakers of the language, but they have lower reading abilities. They have maybe reading disabilities or lower reading levels, or those who have not have high education or have not had the opportunity to attend the school. I just want to extend a question to you, and of course I'm not asking for an answer, just food for thought. Do lack of academic English, lower reading levels, and lack of educational opportunities make anyone a bad driver? Here in, since we're talking about the advanced literacy exams, in 2014, the College Board overhauled their SAT college entrance exam in 2014, and they removed all the obscure vocabulary from them and from the test. College Board President David Coleman at that time said that the test should provide worthy challenges and not artificial obstacles. And that's what we have in this test right now. These are not worthy challenges. These are unnecessary obstacles that we need to remove from the test. So again, I'm not asking to make the test simple or easy by any means. The DVS should keep the rigor of the test the same, only write the question in a way where people can understand. I would like to conclude my testimony by saying that writing the test following the guidelines of Plain Language Act will not only make it a valid assessment, which every assessment should be valid, for driving, but also make it ensure an equitable opportunity for every Minnesotan to succeed. And it could also result into more legal drivers on the road, and especially after the passage of driver's license for all, this is the next logical step we can take. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there discussion? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Vice Chair Kapke knows this answer, maybe someone else in the audience does. But it's my understanding that the federal government, as you stated, passed a law in 2010. So, like, I was right out of high school in 2010, saying that we need to have it in plain language. And then the Governor Dayton, in 2014, had an executive order, which was stated already as well, saying that we need all agencies to have this common language, this understandable way of writing things. That was a decade ago. So the question is, why are we still dealing with this? I'm not saying we shouldn't deal with it today. I'm just wondering, it's been 14 years in one instance, it's been a decade in another instance, and we're still not here. With that being said, why are we spending $212,000 on stuff that we should have done a decade ago? Is that not done, or are we just redoing what's already been done?
Vice Chair Tapke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, yeah, that's a really great question, and it would be wonderful if it were done already, and it all depends on, I think my understanding is it all depends on what your interpretation of what the plain language standard requires, and so a lot of folks didn't feel like testing was included up under that plain language standard, and so with that, DVS has since changed their, I don't know if necessarily changed their opinion on that is a great way to say it, but has taken a different direction, and they are working on this as we speak, and this will help to make sure that that gets done in a timely manner and gets implemented and does a good job for everybody. So the testing side of things has been iffy, so a lot of folks thought it would reduce the rigor of the test by using plain language for it, but this, in my opinion, clearly does not.
Can I?
Mr. Chair,
proceed.
Testify would like to add something.
So in my correspondence with the DVS, and I had a meeting with them as well, they said that they are aware of the Plain Language Act guidelines, and right now they are at the correspondence level with the layman, but they do not have enough resources to implement this Plain Language Act guidelines onto their test or the manual. And for that, we started a petition as well on which we have all over 1,500 signatures for asking the governors to give us the to give DVS enough resources so that they can implement these Plain Language Act guidelines on their manual and the test. So they said they don't have enough resources.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment. It's always disappointing to me when agencies consistently say we just don't have the resources for this. Like, it's a $70 billion government. I think you can find the resources in the couch cushions.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Is there any other discussion? Representative Murphy. Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tapke. I was just wondering, you know, the cleaning up the language makes sense to me, but can we do it without spending the money? And there's other groups. I mean, the CDL group, you're going to have CNAs. We talked about that. But cleaning the language makes sense without having to spend the money on all the extra stuff. And when does it stop? When do we have to also get to, you know, we have to change signs? Where does the money stop being spent? If we can just change the language, wouldn't that be a better first step to make sure it's plain language?
Vice Chair Tapke.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm not sure I understand the question specifically that you're asking there, but what My opinion on that is it is really important that we make sure that everyone on the roads is safe and understands what it is to be a good driver in the state of Minnesota, as well as reducing the time that it takes to get through the driver's test if folks need to have retakes or however that works. We know that that's an issue that has been perennially problematic, and if we can make sure that if someone who knows what they need to know to be a good driver is able to take and pass the test and just has issues, whether it's language issues, whether they get scared at taking tests, whatever that is, that if they have a better opportunity at passing this test because they have the knowledge and they know what it takes to be a good driver in the state of Minnesota, that we're making sure that we are giving every opportunity to get that done.
Representative Murphy.
So if we just simplify the test, where does the cost come in?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, this is not simplifying the test. This is not changing the rigor or the requirements of knowledge for the test whatsoever. This is just making sure that instead of having that with the plain language, that it is having straight up questions that are asking a question with an answer on there, and not neither nor and either or and except for this and but for that. If you read the language that's in here, it very clearly delineates as to what the plain language, it reiterates what the plain language standards are with that. So it's not simplifying the test. And MnDOT is going through DVS is going through rewrites of this now. But in order to get to this level of specificity and make sure that there is adequate input from all stakeholders to make sure that we're getting where we need to be with this so that it gets done right, the fiscal note is like, obviously, I'd rather have a fiscal note that was $0, and that would be, I mean, we'd obviously all love to have that, but it takes money to get some things done and get them done right, and I'd much rather have this done right than to skimp on it. So I think we'll be much more successful as a state doing that.
Just to follow up, the testifier's words were tricky. So you make it less tricky. How is making the test less tricky going to cost $212,000?
revised.
Is it, are we adding languages, or what are we doing that's different than the graph that she showed a minute ago? Showed the difference between you know, native speakers and not. And so my question is, if we just make it less tricky, how does that trigger added cost? So that's my final question.
Mr. Chair, if we could have DBS come down.
Oh, wonderful. DBS is
that? If DBS could come down and answer that question.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for the question. It's the bulk of the fiscal note is actually targeted for translation, and which is the cost for us. currently, we offer the test in multiple languages, and as we put together this fiscal note, we identify that if we're going to update the manual and update the exam, that we should do that across the board for all the languages that we already support. And so you'll see in the fiscal note, in the assumptions, we detailed which portions need translation and which portions need reprogramming. That is the bulk of the cost.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for the director. It's my understanding that DVS already has about $20 million. Is there a plan for that $20 million that you have? You can't absorb some of that yourself?
Vice Chair Tapper.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's where the money is coming from. It's from the $20 million operating fund.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that.
We have,
yeah, it's not general fund. It's coming from that already existing operating fund. So this
Chair
is not.
Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the point I was going to make. If you read the bill, it says it's coming from the driver and vehicle services operating account, so it's not new money. It's coming from within the department.
Thank you for that introduction, you know, the sly little, if you read the bill, appreciate it. I was reading my little notes here.
All right, good to have a little mixing it up a little. That got everyone woke up a little bit, woken up a little bit. Okay, any further discussion? All right. Vice Chair Tapke, do you have any additional thoughts that you would like to convey about House File 3071 as amended?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I just first want to appreciate and thank Amna for just her incredible work on this. If you saw that binder that she's got, it's got tons of signatures in there, lots and lots of data, lots and lots of information that about this issue. And she's put so much work into getting us to this point. It's just been wonderful working with her and getting here. So this is something that will help to alleviate issues within the testing side of things with DVS. This is a bill that will help make sure that this is accessible to everyone, no matter if you have limited English, no matter if you are if you are someone who struggles with tests, this is something that would be good for everyone, and I would appreciate everyone's support in moving this to Ways and Means. With that, I renew my motion to move House File 3071 as amended to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tapke. So our third bill for today comes from Chair Cagle, and I understand you have an author's amendment as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do have. I'll move the House File 3467 to, what's the motion? Ways and Means?
Ways and Means. General Register.
General Register. And so the I'll move the A1 amendment. This deletes the section or 2.4 for 2.12. That language was a little problematic, so we wanted to get rid of it.
Okay. So discussion of the A1. Okay. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. To the bill.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3467, as amended, allows MnDOT to do some planning, design, developing, construction, operating, and promotion for maintaining the passenger rail system. And so with that, pretty simple bill. I'll give it to my testifier if he has anything to add.
Mr. Rudine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And, you know, we do anticipate that service on the second train to Chicago will begin sometime this spring. That service will be operated by Amtrak, and certainly they will do some promotional activities related to that service, but we wanted to have at least the option if we feel they're not doing an adequate job of promoting the service, because they obviously have other services all around the country. We wanted to have the ability to supplement that with some additional promotional and potentially advertising to enhance that service and you know, future passenger rail projects as well as they begin service in the future. So that's what the bill now does, and we'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Rudine. Discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is to Mr. Rudine. You sent some information to our researcher, and I need some clarification on this. You say that Amtrak is both the operator of the state-supported service and owns slash operates a competing service, the Empire Builder, between Seattle and Chicago. So my question is, why are we in competition with someone who's working with us? And it sounds like we are grinding each other's gears here, and if we're promoting our own, why are they in any way interested in promoting that aspect of it when they're going to recoup losses from us anyways? How does this work? Can you please explain that just a little bit? It's minorly concerning that we're promoting something that they should also be promoting, but they may not be promoting because they're promoting something else.
Who's promoting what?
That's my question, Mr. Chair.
Good question, Mr. Chair. So, you know, we're excited that the service is coming, but we don't actually know yet how much promotion Amtrak will do. They will be the operator, so they operate the current Empire Builder today, which goes all the way from Chicago to Seattle. Then they will be the operator of the second train that will have better start times, departure times. It also will be originating in St. Paul, so we expect that there won't be the delays that we sometimes see because of the service can get delayed, you know, in Montana or the Dakotas on its way here. And we do anticipate that there will be some level of promotion by Amtrak for the second train to Chicago, but we don't know exactly what that will look like yet. And, you know, there might be instances where Minnesota wants to partner with Wisconsin and Illinois to sort of do some special promotions perhaps, and some of that will be done in partnership with Amtrak, and some of it might just be, you know, something that we undertake on our own. So, you know, we do anticipate coordinating with Amtrak. They will be the operator of the service. It's just that if we find that they're not, in our view, sort of doing an adequate job of promoting the service, we would like the ability to supplement that.
One follow-up, Mr.
Yes.
Chair? Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's my understanding that the one train to Chicago right now actually does really well, kind of almost breaks even if you can break even with a train. With the second train that we're opening up, do we incur any potential losses? The state has to pay Amtrak for these. How long is this in perpetuity? Because if that is the case, I don't know why Amtrak wouldn't just take their promotional money elsewhere and promote something that they're maybe not getting such a sweet deal, having the state cover any losses that they could potentially have. It sounds like a wonderful business model.
Mr. Dean.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there will be an operating subsidy that's required going forward, and so Minnesota will split that with Wisconsin and Illinois, so each of the three states will have a portion of that operating subsidy. So, you know, we're trying to finalize those agreements now. The legislature last year did enact an appropriation to provide those resources for the operating subsidy that will be required going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have some report or something that we can look at that identifies how much economic benefit this train brings into our state? Some way that we can identify this? Because if the state is subsidizing people coming from Chicago to Minnesota, and those people are then spending money here, there is benefit to having it. At the same time, if it's just everyone going from Minnesota to Chicago in order to spend their money there, then it's not quite so great. Do we have some numbers that help me take this state subsidy and kind of just put it a little bit aside and say, you know, the benefits outweigh the costs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, yeah, we do have some of that. I think the Great River Rail Commission has also put together some of those numbers to look at the economic benefits to, you know, the communities, especially that have the service, like Red Wing and Winona. So I'll be happy to send you that to you. Yep.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Houdin, is there any other services or businesses that we promote through MnDOT?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, we do have the Easy Pass system, and so that would be one other example that would come to mind where there are some promotional materials that we have. You know, there I've seen a couple of billboards, for example, if we have a new corridor that when 35E opened, I remember seeing a couple billboards to sort of let people know how they could sign up for the Easy Pass system. You know, we have a separate sort of program related to traffic safety that we partner with the Department of Public Safety on. So that's not really promotional, you know, in the sense, but we do, you know, all sorts of outreach for getting people to think about traffic safety and doing, you know, developing materials that can be used, whether that's in schools or for seniors and so forth, to encourage safe driving.
Do those areas typically come out of the budget for MnDOT, or how are those expenses covered?
excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy. There, in the case of the traffic safety, there are usually federal funds that can be used for those activities. For the Easy Pass system, that would come out of the Easy Pass budget, and so there's you know the tolls that are collected from Easy Pass system, and I think that our metro district may also have a small amount that they use for sort of, you know, public awareness. And again, it's more about telling people how they can sign up, you know, direct them to the website if they're interested in opening an account and that sort of thing.
Thank you. Okay. Any other discussion? All right. Well. Chair Cagle, did you want to close us out here? Any final?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, one of the things that I imagine that could happen with this is promotional events to Wrigley for a Twins game. That's what I'm excited about. So with that, I will renew my motion that 3467 be moved to the general register.
Okay, you know what? I actually
as amended.
Thank you.
I don't think there's anyone from the audience who wants to testify.
Okay. We have a motion then that House File 3467 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. Okay. Very interesting that Mr. Bauman predicted this meeting would end at 9:14. Kind of like the Swiss. We're talking about trains, the Swiss train. So we're going to have a hearing on Thursday. There's a major effort on behalf of MnDOT to rethink I-94. Many, many proposals. I believe there's 10 or so on the table. This is the busiest artery in the state, and so we'll have an update on that process, so there's no bills on Thursday, but then we'll resume with some bills and other agency testimony the following week. And so with that, we are adjourned.